Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
Hi, I'm Rob Greaves and it's my great pleasure to share with you another wonderful Listen to Older Voices program where we listen to the third and final part of the story of Val Waller. Val has shown herself to be a clearly accomplished storyteller and the passion of her stories reflect the passion she has for life. Although she started her adult life in what might be seen as a rather conservative industry, working for the Commonwealth Bank, she quickly threw off these shackles to become a most skilled air hostess with TAA in the 1950s. Eventually, she met John and married him. And while this commenced another interesting phase of her life, it brought to a close her days with TAA. Living with John in New Guinea proved to be quite an adventure. John was himself a very skilled sailor, and Val shares some great stories about him. But eventually, she returns to Australia, the place we learn that is most dear to her, where sadly, she loses John to cancer. Again, her indomitable spirit shines through, and her stories continue to enthrall us. We pick up now with Val talking about life after TAA.
Was the fact that you were with John and married to him, did that buffer satisfactorily not being a hostess, or did you miss it for a while?
Well, I missed the company, but after 4.5 years, which is a long time for anyone to fly, usually it was 2 years. Very few lasted longer than that. I was getting to the stage where it was the same thing over and
tedious.
Over again, you know.
Yes.
So John and I married and we went up, we lived in Rabaul for a while, and so for the first few months I didn't see him because he went off to sea.
He was still, yes.
And then...
What was life like for you then? I mean, this is a strange country now.
Yes.
Yes, well, what was it like for you?
Well, the man for whom John worked was very nice, and he sort of looked after me. He and his brothers, there were four brothers lived up there. One of them was on the ship with John, and the others were around the town, and they really were very kind to me. And I knew some of the TAA staff there, so, you know, I knew a few people there. And the local parish priest was really kind, so I was okay. But then we hadn't been there long, and they decided that they would open an office in Port Moresby and that John could move to Port Moresby, so we moved there. At this stage I'd become pregnant, and he decided that if we were going to have children, he didn't want to be going off to sea and leaving me alone, so he would take a job on shore doing the stevedoring. So that's what happened, and all our children were born in Port Moresby, 2 boys and 2 girls.
What was your life like?
Well,
was it significantly different to living in Australia?
Oh, yes, and you had to be very careful. For instance, when you were driving, if you had an accident, you didn't stop. You drove straight to the local police station. That was one of the rules.
So you had to go to the police straight to station?
Well, because,
why?
A couple of times there'd been young children hit when they'd run across the road, you know, got off the bus and run across the road. And the drivers of the cars were molested by locals because they'd hit this child.
So taking law into their own hands, in other words.
Yes. So one man ran into a trade store and locked himself in the toilet, and there was a mob with axes, which they got from the trade store. So when you drove the car, you always had the doors locked and you didn't give anybody a lift.
So it was a little bit wild, was it?
It was, yes. It was a bit scary. And we had... cyclone wire on the windows to stop intruders. And we had quite a lot of intruders. And when John went away, I would lock myself in the bedroom with the four children and stay there for the night. So it was a bit scary. It was becoming... this was just before independence, and it was becoming a little bit lawless.
Yes, indeed. So did you ever fear for your life?
Not fear for my life, but... I was scared because when you're at home alone, because John was loading ships at night till midnight quite often, and I did have one intruder. He was on my veranda and about to come into the house, and I screamed and he ran off. That was a bit scary because, you know, you're alone. There were no near neighbours. So that was a bit scary.
Yes, I'm sure it was.
And because our house was a little bit isolated, there were a few people sort of hanging around, and it wasn't really comfortable. So just before independence, John decided that we would move to Australia.
And you came back to where?
We moved to this place called Lennox Head, which is halfway between Byron Bay and Ballina. And he sort of did various jobs because, of course, he couldn't go to sea from there. And we were there for 24 years.
That's a significant amount of time. So your family basically grew up there?
Yes, they all grew up there. And one son still lives there, and he loves it. But coming into a very small town, and we were tourists, and we weren't locals. When I left, I was still a tourist.
That's right. Mm. That's right.
And it was just a very strange atmosphere, and I used to notice the difference. I would go shopping in Lismore, which was inland, and people were so much friendlier, so much more helpful. But for some reason, these little coastal villages are very close-knit.
Yes.
And you just never belong.
No, you've got to be there several generations before they even start really talking to you.
Well, you had to be born there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but some of the people there had... One lass had never been further north than Tweed Heads or further south than Coffs Harbour. And there were a lot of people like that. So we lived there, and it was quite pleasant, but I'm not really a beach person.
Yes. Well, 24 years is a long time not to be a beach person for.
It is. And the kids loved it when they were young, but Mark's still there, but none of the others really likes it. They didn't like it, and the girls went off travelling.
So what was the trigger for leaving there?
Well, then John retired, and he decided that he bought a yacht, and he was going to sail around the world. And it would have meant that I was in Lennox Head, and I said, well, no, I'd like to move back to Victoria.
So you're not a sailor? You don't have sea legs? No.
No,
you're an air person, not a water person.
No, definitely not. No. At one stage, John and I were living on his ship.
Yeah.
And I would have to, and I was pregnant at the time too, and I'd have to walk from the wharf to the ship. And I'd have two men behind me and two men there saying, come on, Val, you can do it. And seeing that water below maybe terrified me. I couldn't make the step across.
And yet you could fly and look down at all
fly
this.
Fly and look down, yes.
Isn't that strange?
That's different. You're in your own little world up there. That's your own little bubble and nothing can touch you. But you can see this moving water there beneath you.
So did John sail around the world?
Well, he didn't sail around the world. He went up to Darwin and then across to Christmas Island and then to Reunion and Mauritius. And he was enjoying the sailing, but the problem is that everything was beginning to cost too much. And you could have, if you wanted something done, if you paid a bit more money, you could have it done quickly.
Yes.
If you didn't pay the money, you might not get it done at all. And so I'd actually moved to Bendigo, and he came back for a little while, and he had a look around to see where we'd live. And I went to show him where my previous block of land was, and this one was for sale, so we grabbed it. And then he went back to Mauritius and was going to sail off, and then suddenly decided no. The sailing was good, but not when he reached land and had to pay bribes and things.
Yes.
So he came back to build the house. So he built the house with the help of Norm Stoddard, a local builder. That's why we're here now.
And here you are. Mm. That's right. Apart from flying, have you done much travelling around Australia?
No, I've been to WA for the wildflowers and around Victoria. I mean, I've been overseas a few times. I've been to Hong Kong and Singapore and 7 trips to Europe because my daughters are there.
You're definitely well-travelled.
So I've done well over my million miles, I think.
Goodness me. Mm. Do you outside of Australia, do you have a favourite country?
No, Australia's my favourite country. When I go to these other countries, and they're beautiful, and London is the most fascinating city. And I look up and I see a Qantas plane and think, why am I here when I could be in Australia?
Well, that answers that question very well. Mm. That's right.
And I mean, and John was English, but he said he could not understand why anybody would live in any country in the world other than Australia or maybe New Zealand.
Is that right?
Mm. He just said, you know, there was everything going for it. And he went back to England after 35 years and said, well, now I've seen it, I've seen everyone, let's go back to Australia. So that was, I was pleased about that because I didn't really want to live in England.
Mm.
But I mean, I think I've been to Bath and Brighton and I just thought they were so fascinating. But there's nothing like Australia, is there?
I don't think you have to convince me of that, and you probably don't have to convince many of the listeners of that either.
No.
All that you've done, I think, has reaffirmed in our minds what
yes.
we already know.
Mm.
Yes.
I've been to cities that never close down, from New York to Rio, an old London town, but no matter how far. I still call Australia home. I'm always traveling, I love being free, and so I keep leaving the sun and the sea, but my heart lies away. Still call Australia home. All the sons and daughters spinning around the world, away from their family and friends. But as the world gets older,
listen to older voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present.
So, what became of John?
He was a smoker. You know, when you're in the Navy, you're given free smokes.
Oh,
okay. He was a smoker, and he smoked heavily. until he was 40, and then he gave up. But he did get lung cancer.
But the damage is done.
The damage was done. And, you know, he had lung cancer, and he was still accepting offers from people to deliver boats for them. He delivered one from Melbourne to the Gold Coast. Didn't tell the owners that he had lung cancer, you know, that he was very ill. He had two trips lined up when he died. He was still going to do those trips.
Some people might think that's stupid, but I mean, it strikes me as being something very positive about the man.
Well, yes, he was in pain, but he could overcome the pain if he was at sea. It's only one thing that brought him back from the sea, and that was he missed me.
Yes. Well, I've read that sailors often say that the sea is a mistress to them.
Yes. And, you know, I wish that I'd let him go off in a boat and just disappear. You know, it's 3 years ago yesterday that he died.
Right.
Down here in Healesville. And he had a lot of pain, but he'd never acknowledge the pain. And yet he's just the most interesting person and an absolute idiot. This is how I see John. He would laugh so much that he wouldn't be able to breathe.
John on the calendar.
Yes.
Oh, great.
And my daughter made that for me.
Sparkling eyes.
Yes, he would just, at Christmas time, he was ridiculous and he'd laugh so much. And this is the story of his adventures in Kenya with if I'd seen that, I'd never have married him. And those pants, he had those for years, those shorts, they were disgusting.
Val has just opened up a book, and the book's entitled And the River Flowed On, An Adventurous Journey Down the Tana River. Now, is this the story of John and his mates, is it?
He and a friend, on their holidays in Kenya.
Goodness me.
Got this little boat, and they sailed down this river Tana, and they discovered some falls which hadn't been discovered before. And they were named after them for a short period. They were called Walmies Falls, after John Waller and Jim Meester. But I think the name's since been changed. So.
And you would hardly call this the height of fashion, I assume.
No.
It's not television, unfortunately. I don't know if I can do this justice describing it, but John's standing on what looks like a small dock or something with his arms crossed, wearing a very beaten-up sun hat and a pair of shorts that look like they survived the Second World War.
Well, I think they did, actually. I think they did. I think they would. Jim was in the Dutch resistance, and I think that they may have been his, those terrible shorts. And I think John finally got rid of them in about 1980 or something. So.
Look, I'm actually amazed he got rid of them after that story. Well, I mean, it sounds like he was, well, not sounds like, it's obvious he was a very adventurous person.
Mm.
And it must give you many wonderful memories.
Yes, he could turn his hand to anything. I mean, he made all the furniture, he made the table, he didn't make the chairs, he made the table. And, you know, I said I wanted a table for my jigsaw, so he made me a jigsaw table. Whatever I wanted, he would make.
Just make it.
Mm, make it for me.
Very skilled man.
Yes.
Do you miss him?
I'm just, you know, after 3 years, I miss him more than when he was here.
Yes.
It's really having someone to laugh with and be stupid with, because
it's an important thing to do, isn't it?
I mean, my daughter one night decided to spend her night in the guest room in our house at Lennox, which was near our bedroom. And about 11 o'clock, she said, "I can't sleep with you two giggling. I'm going up to the other end." He would say something quite stupid, and the two of us would just...
Yes.
We couldn't control ourselves.
Yes.
And that's what he was like. I mean, he could be very terse when he wanted to, but...
Every coin has two sides.
Mm. But when he was terse, he was usually justified, I think. Mm.
So what does life hold for you now? What are the things that keep you motivated?
I'm not sure that I am very motivated. I go on from day to day, and I sew a lot, and I knit a lot, and I write letters to my grandchildren, and when my computer's working, I send them emails. And or Skype them.
Mm.
And I love my garden, of course. But it's not quite the same without him, because there's no one to share everything with, you know.
Yes. So, look, I mean, short of that unfortunate accident like the bus hitting us, you would have many years left in your life. I mean, you look well and you look active. What do you see for the future?
At present, I'm not sure. I'm taking every day as
one
it comes, because I don't... my daughter wants me to go to London, but for some reason I don't have any wish to go. I find it hard to leave this house because this is where John is.
This is your memories. Mm. Yes. Yes, I can appreciate that.
Mm.
Maybe it's something that only time will unfold and tell you.
Yes.
But you're also involved in the program that I work for, the Melbourne program. Mm. What do you do in that?
Well, I visit two elderly ladies once a week, and I also go and chop up food for the animals with the wildlife care up Chum Creek Road, and we chop up cabbages and all sorts of vegetables so that they can distribute them through the bush and the animals can come at night and choose what they want from this smorgasbord of leftover fruit and veggies, mainly veggies, because some of the fruit's a bit acid for them.
Yes.
And or bread. We chop up a lot of bread too.
Do you enjoy doing that?
I love doing that because it's for the animals. And the wildlife carer has a baby wombat, and that's my incentive for going out there. She's so beautiful. She comes and rubs up against your leg, and then she becomes like a playful kitten and she frisks about, and then she becomes a sedate wombat again. She's so... Oh, you should go out and see her along Old Chum Creek Road.
Contact with animals is quite often important here for humans, isn't it?
It is, yes. We've always had dogs. We had dogs and a calf, and we had guinea pigs and cats and chooks. And a pig at one stage. My son brought me home a pig for a present. And Piggy was lovely, but he was a bit naughty. He kept burrowing and escaping. So
pigs will do that.
Yes, we had to get rid of Piggy. I don't have a pet now. I miss that. But, you know, I have magpies and kookaburras and...
The wildlife.
Well, the wildlife,
Listen to older voices. Ageless Radio.
Your visits to your two elderly local people, why do you do that?
I don't know. I think we have to look after older people, and I think they've got so much to teach us. I mean, not that they're all that much older than I am, but... One woman in particular has such strength of character and such a positive outlook on life that if I'm feeling down, I go and see her and I come away feeling a lot better because we laugh together.
So it's not a one-way thing?
It's not a one-way thing, no. And she's just inspirational. She's got one leg and she's the most positive person you could ever meet. You go up there and you come away feeling good about yourself.
That's quite amazing, because today there are so many people walking around with long faces and moaning and groaning who, for all intents and purposes, are in good health. And yet, as you said, here's a person who's in the latter part of her life with one leg and yet so positive.
And she's very positive and she just loves... She lives up there on that hill. For the benefit of the radio, I'm pointing to the hill on my left.
Some beautiful hills too, I might point
yes.
out.
Yes, and she's very content living in the bush. She doesn't like too many people around her.
So she literally lives in the bush?
Mm, alone.
How amazing. Mm. Well, our time is almost up, Val. Mm. Could I ask you just one question? That you've lived quite, a very interesting life, and the journey's probably not over.
But do you know, everyone's life is their life, and it doesn't seem all that interesting.
To ourselves,
you know,
no.
It's just it's these just the things come along and you do them.
Mm. Mm. But over that period, what would be the greatest change that you have seen that's had an impact on you? What's the biggest change in your lifetime?
I think it's the lack of community. When I was a kid, everyone knew the neighbours, and my grandmother was always cooking meals for people who were sick. Everyone helped one another. And when my father got his car, very few people had a car, and he felt that he had no right to drive past anyone who was walking just because he had a car.
Truly.
And my mother used to become very cross because our car was always full of people that my father picked up.
Bless him.
But he didn't feel right not yes. offering people lifts. It was his duty because he had a car.
So it's all, it was about social contact and just community spirit.
Yes, and you went and welcomed new neighbours, and you, because there weren't cars, you walked past people's houses. And I mean, people still say hello to you, but there's not, the contact doesn't go further unless you make it.
You were telling me a story before we went on air that I think might be a good way for us to finish and give an example of that. Do you mind retelling the story about the bus driver? Oh, you rode your bike. You used yes. to ride your bike everywhere.
Yes, well, you rode your bike to the station and you left your bike. Everybody left their bikes behind the milk bar and your bike was there when you came home. You just threw them down on the ground and picked them up when you came home. Nobody stole anyone's bike. And sometimes, you know, I'd go out Friday nights and Saturday night, come home on the last train, and if there weren't many people on the bus driver would let me put my bike on the bus, and then he would drive up the hill opposite our house and face the bus with the lights shining across the paddock so I could see my way across the paddock.
I think that really tells a story, doesn't it? Because yes. that's just not going to happen these days.
No, no.
And yet it just shows the care that people felt for each other then.
But this was a little privately owned bus company in Eltham. And if the bus missed the train, well, they drove you to Greensboro in the bus to catch the train Incredible. There. And then, of course, it was changed and a big company took over and it was much less personal.
As indeed all society became, has become.
Yes. Yeah.
Val, it's been a wonderful journey you've taken us on. Thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices.
Well, it's my pleasure to be able to talk.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.